Welcome to the Roanoke Collaboration Project Radio Show, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story on Radio Melrose. Joining us today are
Dana Ackley, author of the forthcoming book, Emotional Intelligence for a Divided World.
I'm William Fralin, a former member of the Virginia House of Delegates.
Bill Lee, retired pastor of Loudoun Avenue Christian Church.
I'm Cynthia Lawrence, head of workforce development for Carilion Clinic.
Joyce Waff, former president and CEO, Roanoke Regional Chamber.
Michael Brockta, CIA retired and recent president of the Kiwanis Club of Roanoke.
January 6, 2021 was not a peaceful day at the Capitol, and efforts to rewrite the history of the riot as a day of love are concerning to Delegate Dan Helmer, a Democrat from Fairfax County. That's why he introduced a bill that puts restrictions on what teachers can say about it in public schools.
The curriculum and instructional materials can't say it was a peaceful protest. It can't say that there was extensive election fraud that would have overturned the election. And it does have to reflect that it was an unprecedented and violent attack on the United States. This is not partisan. These are just facts.
Republicans voted against the bill, but critics also include advocates for free speech who oppose banning books.
You can't restrict instruction in state law without it being censorship.
That's Laura Benitez at PEN America, who says the bill is a gag order.
When you have the state legislature come in and say you can't talk about this specific idea in a specific way, or maybe not at all, the chilling effect really goes beyond even just that one idea. There is this fear that you're going to violate state law, and that's not something that teachers are going to take lightly.
She says Governor Abigail Spanberger should veto the bill. I'm Michael Pope.
All right. So we've got a non-controversial topic this this week. We've got the how do we instruct students on the January 6th insurrection. So interesting story. Any initial thoughts?
Well, I think there is a lot that we could unpack here, including different people look at the same, quote, facts and see things quite differently. And then there's the issue of state law trying to censor what the educators do. It's very complicated.
Yet, right. I would say that there are, from something like that, that lends itself to many ways of having conversations exactly like we're trying to have that are not necessarily easy when you don't always agree, yet need to be shared and looked at from more, probably even more than two sides.
So, you know, one of the things I'm sure that our teachers try to do is let students understand a set of facts from different perspectives. People have different perspectives sometimes. Of course, there are, you know, operative facts that are accurate or not accurate. And so this, I will say this as a former member of the General Assembly, it is very unusual in one sense for the General Assembly to get this deep into instruction and say you must, you know, must. And it sounded from the story like this was mostly some prohibitions, some things you could not say about the January 6th, I guess, insurrections, the word. That's a loaded word, too, I guess. But so but that is very rare. Now, on the other hand, it is not unusual for them to start meddling a little bit into the standards of learning and what exactly across, you know, curricula, what we're trying to teach. So that's not that unusual, but a specific incident in time and the different perspectives and I suspect we all have different perspectives on that, on what happened. And I suspect our listeners do as well, Mike.
I'll just mention that my wife spent a long career as a teacher, high school level teacher. And she'd be the first to point out that you gear the information you're sharing with the students at an age appropriate level. And I didn't hear that dimension discussed in the news reporting. I heard kind of a one size fits all, let's legislate the following. And I'd certainly hate to think that we're going to remove the opportunity from our teachers to go ahead and use their expertise to address subjects, even controversial ones like this, at an age-appropriate level.
Right. Joyce?
History, you know, is written by usually the victors. You know, whether it's a battle, a war, you know, north, south, whatever, you know, by those who won. And so I think this brings up something because it's so relatively current that, you know, it makes it even more difficult because I don't know that everyone has it, that the, even all the perspectives have shaken out.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that, and I've talked about this before in my fourth grade class book, which has been shown on many shows, it actually had like, you know, a picture of people coming over, of black people coming over here on slave ships, you know, all happy and glad that they got to come to America and all these crazy, you know, things that we know are absolutely untrue now and were untrue at the time. So there's a perspective here to look at this incident that occurred. If we start limiting the way we can look at that, are we in some way stepping back in time to where we imposed a perspective on instruction? Bill?
Yeah, that was precisely what I was thinking. I'm remembering my fourth grade Virginia history book.
Probably the same book.
Yeah. Somebody deliberately did that. So this is not new. What I think the insurrection, whatever you want to call it, may help us do is what I did as I got older, and that's create and recreate my own history. I bought as many books as I could that would help me get the stuff I didn't get. So if you look at the people on the corridor of Melrose, my children did not get history in school. They got history at home. Hmm. I taught history at my church. I taught the book Before the Mayflower by Laron Bennett so they would get a full understanding of history. So on one end, it looks like the state and General Assembly is getting in the way. For me, I think it might press us at another level. What can I do to, can anybody censor, can anybody take away? If I teach it, I'll teach it with a full orb understanding and not a narrow.
Gotcha. You know, I actually had a tour the other day of the Harrison Museum of African American Culture, which I must say I had not seen their new place. You know, that whole institute or whole museum is about trying to give a different perspective on history and a perspective that wasn't really heard about. You know, I think relating it back to the January 6th incident, when you start saying things like it was not peaceful, it certainly was not peaceful for a lot of people. But there are also people that went to the Capitol that did not go in the Capitol. There were people that I'm sure saw what was going on and disengaged from what happened. So there are probably very various perspectives on that. I think we can all agree that what happened that day was reprehensible, and police officers were injured, and people were killed, and it was certainly not something you want to condone.
And yet, William, not everybody agrees with you. Not everybody agrees. There are those people who do not think it was reprehensible. I'm not suggesting that I agree with those folks, but it's a fascinating lesson in people looking at the same situation and coming away with very different impressions. And from an educational point of view, picking up on what Mike was saying with regarding his wife as a teacher, it's a wonderful opportunity for a teacher to present these two points of view and let the students talk about them and let them wrestle with how can we have such different impressions of the same events.
That's a good point. I mean, how could you teach that if you weren't allowed to say one of the things?
Exactly.
Bill.
When I took history, it was a written history. This history is oral. It's media driven. Even I think if the teachers were told what they could or could not say, it would become almost a farce because the children have seen it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they keep seeing it. They'll hear it in school. They say, well, let me just Google that. Let me just YouTube that. And they'll see once. So I think the teachers then is in a jam to present it the way media showed it to us live.
Right. And the teacher also has to, you know, different levels to what we were talking about earlier. What's age appropriate for some people to see and we discuss, and what's age appropriate for others, and who makes that decision? Yeah, Mike.
You know, I want to react at a different level just for a minute. Certainly the story is focused on Virginia. It's focused on one specific topic and how we might handle that topic in the education system. But really what I'm hearing a much broader story, the story of honesty, the story of integrity, or the story of facts. Now, my professional career at the CIA was spent as an engineer. Engineers are driven by facts. And we have a fairly comfortable time understanding the relationship between facts and opinion. And I'm not so sure that the society at large is quite as well equipped to do that as perhaps someone from the sciences or the engineering background. So my point is, if that's true, if society doesn't have quite an easy time distinguishing between facts and opinions, then I think we need to do something to help them with that.
Right. In fact, facts and opinions and uncertainty may, in fact, have the unintended consequences of having teachers just avoid the topic in general. And that could be a thing. Anyway, so I want to remind folks, you're listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project radio show, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story on Radio Melrose. And you can follow us at roanokecollaboration.org, and you're welcome to take our pledge for constructive dialogue there.
Dang. And I've lost track of what I wanted to say.
Well, we have to do these reset breaks. You know? It's mandatory.
So,
Bill.
So Mike said he questions whether the general public at large has the capacity to grapple with this. I have a 6-year-old granddaughter. And the question she asked Papa, so when she asked me Sunday at dinner, now, Papa, Jesus died, right? I said, yeah. How did he come back to life? I'm still trying to answer that question. The way they are bombarded by media, she has her own iPad. I would dare say that the kids who go to the library on Melrose, they are sitting in there watching, looking at this stuff. And I don't think we're going to slip this stuff by them. I think we need to teach it and teach it right. Otherwise, we're going to be called fraudulent again. 50, 60, I can Bill, go back. 60 years, 65 years since I was at that age. I don't think we want to dumb them down at this point. I think they are way more sophisticated. And the reason I say the Melrose Library, I go there, my granddaughter goes there, and I watch what these kids are doing. Quite sophisticated. Yeah.
So, and one question I had in mind is this a solution in search of a problem in this sense? Do we really think there are teachers in Virginia that are now telling people that it was a perfectly peaceful protest on January 6th and that nothing untoward happened and that it was all fine and it wasn't violent? I don't believe that. And if there is somebody teaching that, then that's probably a problem for the school system to deal with. But Cynthia.
Yeah, and I don't know about that either. Just to respond to that, I'm wondering if some of this is in the same context as the argument for redistricting, a backlash against the federal narrative or rhetoric by a certain group of people, and it found its way to the governor's desk in that context, possibly. But that's not really what my point was going to be. I was going to pick up on what Bill said. Mm-hmm. The public school system has an ethics course that is curriculum appropriate as young as third grade. I happen to know this because I have a family member in the public school system up in the Northern Virginia area, and she teaches this course in her third grade class. And these students are taught to be presented with an ethical dilemma and then have constructive dialogue around it. It is curriculum that exists. Not all school districts teach it because they don't all have enough personnel to dedicate to this sort of activity. It is a precursor to a philosophy course or an ethics course in post-secondary school. But we have that kind of curriculum. In my opinion, I think we ought to take an issue like this and use it to teach the value of free speech and the fact that we live in a country that allows free speech, but we have to respect that. With freedom comes responsibility. And I think therein lies the lesson is, and as early as we can instill critical thinking skills and have them come to these ethical dilemmas, not to take them as, take opinion as fact, but to discern the facts. So I'm supporting Mike's comment on that one.
Mike.
Cynthia, you just used two of my favorite words, critical thinking. Critical thinking. I've been trying to gain an understanding of the state of critical thinking in the United States today. And I've been trying to compare that to where it was in the past. I'm trying to understand whether our society is doing better or worse at critical thinking. The evidence is not conclusive, right? So maybe there are pockets like you've described where that's being given adequate attention. But the evidence does suggest that as a society, we are losing our ability to think critically and that that's being replaced by stuff we're being spoon-fed on, you know, social media or any other channel. So I'm delighted to hear you can construct at least one example of where critical thinking is viewed as important enough to teach. But I'm not so sure our society's doing that well right now with critical thinking.
And it takes us, to build on what the two of you are saying, it takes us to what is the purpose of education? And I think a lot of folks, well, we need to give students facts. Well, there are way too many facts for anybody to manage anymore. So a lot of education needs to be about teaching skills such as critical thinking. And give people skills that they can work with as they deal with new facts as they come along.
Right. And in a and teach kids to do it in a constructive dialogue way, which is what we are trying to emulate here. And I remember in one of my favorite times in elementary school in fifth grade was the teacher, Ms. Sloanaker. Yeah, love Ms. Sloanaker. She would have a 15 or 20 minute brainstorming session, where anybody could just start talking about, and it usually started with something innocuous like a TV show episode or something, but it inevitably went, because she guided us with questions towards something meaningful. I don't know. I'd hate to lose that because we're afraid that we might say the wrong thing, maybe. Is it Bill?
Yeah. I'm trying to think back. I was feeling before I was thinking. I was feeling that I was left out of history. I was feeling that my history was twisted whenever I saw it. So the critical stuff that you're talking about came much later for me. I think, again, a lot of the kids that I deal with are probably feeling way more than trying to do any critical thinking, because they would look at what happened at the Capitol and what they see is white people acting crazy. That's what they would see.
Maybe not 100% inaccurate.
And then they will wonder why, when they do something, they are chastised and beaten down when they see, Reverend, you see how them people acted? So why are they on me? Why would the school system put me in an after-school suspension? Why are you doing all that to me? And the president, they don't even put him in timeout. They feel, and they see it, they feel, and I think the cognitive stuff come later, and it may not come because they feel so deeply and don't see a connection.
There is so much modeling of out-of-control emotion, Bill. You're absolutely right. We got some feedback on our program. Somebody said that it was kind of bland, and in fact, it is compared to the yelling and the screaming that we see so much in our media and from too many of our leaders today. Critical thought requires some control of emotion and how you express that emotion.
I'm going to have to jump in and tag on to what Bill is saying. Young children don't have the vocabulary to express their feelings. And so I think families, aunts, uncles, older mentors for these young people, to the best of our ability, we need to model vocabulary. We need to understand when feelings are outstripping the words and figure out how to surround them and give them the tools that they need to express themselves. Now, when they get into the school system, our school system does have some tools to help do that, but it still has to happen at home.
It isn't just children that need labels.
No, it isn't.
For labels for their feelings. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Mike?
You know, I'm back up at the 50,000-foot level with my thinking at the moment. Again, this is being portrayed as a narrow issue, how to teach one subject in one state. But really what I'm seeing is beginnings of a discussion that applies not just here in Roanoke or not just in the Melrose neighborhood, but across the country. I'm hearing, to use a title from a book about 20 years ago, I'm hearing us talk about inconvenient truths. In other words, some of these facts are not convenient for all members of our society to accept. And so rather than even debate the facts or talk about them critically, we're going to change them or ignore them or deny them. And again, when I'm at the 50,000-foot level, that's what really concerns me most, is stories like this, for me, suggest we got far bigger problems nationwide than one specific piece of legislation in Virginia.
So you mean, Mike, the fact that somebody felt the need to put the bill in because they were afraid that it would be to Bill's point, Mike, that maybe the president's version of events would be the one that's taught.
Thank you.
As true, when that's, you know, whatever your truth about that is, the extremes are probably
well said.
Not true.
Well said. Thank you.
To show you where we are, we're talking about an insurrection. Good Lord. Don't our kids need to talk about something a little more important than some grown-up people acting like kids in Washington? These are grown-up people. Some are law enforcement people. Some of these are military people. I think our kids deserve a little bit more of, I don't call that history. I don't call that history. It just happens to be something you could see because we got all this media stuff. But why not they learn that there is a Constitution, there is a Declaration of Independence? Why can't we tell them that we still hold these truths to be self-evident? All men are created equal. They're endowed with their created with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And we'll have to talk about it.
Well, and one way to look at that, Bill, is, well, if it was an insurrection, if it was trying to stop the process, it didn't.
Correct.
The Constitution was followed. And at the end of the day, the winner of the election was inaugurated, right, and was our last president. That's it. But I want to get back to the frustration. What I sensed coming you when you were taught history in the fourth grade book that we talked about was a frustration that kind of, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but internally, this is not right.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel like this is what happened. And I need to maybe go outside of the system to figure out what really happened. And we don't want people to have to do that, right? We want them to be able to, within the educational system, get everything and be able to talk about that. Mike.
In Mike's world, where only Mike lives, I guess, critical thinking is the key to addressing what you've just said. In other words, no matter how well the school or education system does with a subject, it'll be incomplete and perhaps, worst case, inaccurate. Okay? So in Mike's world, then we would apply our critical thinking skills to deal with that situation. And that's a fantasy world.
Well, but how does a fourth grader apply critical thinking skills to get past? I mean, they really can't, right? Well, and by the way, you've got to pair it back to the teacher what the teacher wants you to pair it back, or you're not going to do very well.
Yeah, and so you have to understand, sure. I'm at an all-black school. All-black school. I never sat in the classroom with a white person until I was 18 years old.
Wow.
I was never taught by a white teacher until I was 18 years old. So my teacher is closing that book. That's where my frustration came from. She said, I can't teach this to y'all because you're not in the book.
Good for
and
her.
So she's mimeographing stuff so that we can. When I got to the 11th grade, we did civics, and I never forget the Civil War. The late J. Allen Ball had these LP records. I can hear now Antietam, Manassas. None of that was in the book, and we weren't in the book. We weren't in the book, and he kept telling us we were there. And we kept saying, well, Mr. Ball, how come we're not in the book? And he kept saying, these are our times. These are our times. I graduated from high school in 1970, but I never sat in a room with people like you in my life. And when I got to my senior year in high school and my senior history teacher, who was white, was teaching history, and I walked out of class and I did not go back. I didn't need the class. I said, Mr. Burke, where are you getting that from? That is not my history.
You know, what's very interesting about that, because I was thinking about my own experience, and I graduated from high school in 1981. So 10 years later, and I remember in second grade when two black kids showed up in every one of my classes at my elementary school. And there were two classes, like fifth grade had two classes because I was the size. So there were two in each class, four in total. And now that I'm thinking about that, the frustration that you heard, that you felt in going to an all-black school, imagine going to an all-white school and they're trying to teach you this stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Real quick, we got to wrap up.
Okay. Just real quickly, similar to you, also graduated in 1970, but in Florida, we didn't get any of this. In any of the history, I mean, Florida almost didn't. We'd learn more about Ponce de Leon than other things. When I got to Virginia, later had kids, you know, the history was so different and deeper and meaningful. I'm sure it's incomplete because how can we cover everything?
Well, thank you. You've been listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project radio show, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story on Radio Melrose. Please don't forget to follow us at roanokecollaboration.org, where you can take the pledge for constructive dialogue. Thank you.